Welcome inside the FIU Athletics Podcast brought to us by Baptist Health. While the final leg of the sprint that is any athletics year ends with cross country and track and field. And so with that final leg in the books, the 25-26 season comes to an end, but it does so with a bang as it was a tremendous run through the postseason for this FIU track and field team. Three members of the squad going to Eugene to the national championships and getting three All-American level performances, including a top 10 national finish for Andres Ortiz-Danter, a phenomenal run for this FIU track and field team. And so we'll catch up with the head man. Ryan Heberling joins us here on the FIU Athletics Podcast. And to boot, after we recorded this, you'll hear him mention this at the end, a couple of U20 performers with some phenomenal runs. And Kylie Neira puts a PR together on the national stage, qualifying her for the World Under 20 Championships. So even after we talked with Coach Heb, the good kept on rolling for the Panthers. A quick timeout here on the FIU Athletics Podcast, and then the head man for FIU track and field and cross country, Ryan Heberling.
At Baptist Health Orthopedic Care, you don't have to be a pro athlete to be treated like one. We use the latest innovations to create a treatment plan personalized for you, no matter who you are. Our team of orthopedic and sports medicine specialists have the expertise to help you get back out there performing at your best. And with top-notch recovery and physical therapy, you'll be back in the game and living your life to the fullest in no time. Welcome to pro-level orthopedic care. Learn more at baptisthealth.net/ortho.
Hey, it's the Good Greek Spiro, and as a former police SWAT officer, I know what it takes to build a great team and to be a great operator. I've applied these principles in building the world's only total relocation company. From listing your house for sale to finding your dream home and everything in between, Good Greek can do it all. Good Greek also offers junk removal and auto shipping to complement our renowned moving and storage business. For your total relocation solutions, go to goodgreek.com.
Good Greek Moving and Storage, your superhero movers.
Always excited to get the chance to talk about postseason runs in any sport, and none more so than the sport where you have team success and individual success. They go hand in hand. That's the nature of track and field and cross country. And so we talk with the head man himself. Ryan Heberling joins us here on the FIU Athletics Podcast. All right. Usually I kind of start these big picture, but I think we have to lock in on DISA here. I think that's the only natural place to start this. Andres Ortiz-Danter, a phenomenal run, winds up top 10 in the entire country. And it's pretty cool because in the lead up to it, you were talking about, you had a feeling that it was going to be one of her best throws. And sure enough, it's a season best. Like we said, one of the best marks in America to finish up in Eugene, Oregon. What was it about this run up for DISA that you thought she would have that success in the finale and overall on this season? Goes from honorable mention All-American to first team All-American. How have you kind of seen that jump?
She's very consistent. You know, so every single day she shows up, you're not getting this wild card of, okay, who's she going to be today? I mean, every single day that she shows up, she has a plan of what she's trying to accomplish. And she's so awesome because she's very mature. She's been throwing javelin a long time. She understands what she's doing. So she's not somebody that we're overly trying to like micromanage. She really comes to practice every day and it's pretty simple. Hey, how you feeling? Okay, cool. What do you want to work on today? She has her plan. I'm there to make sure that she stays healthy. She stays grounded with everything. But she's been throwing javelin as long as she has. You know, you're not overly worried about it. And our biggest thing that we wanted to see at the national championship, and you know, Coach Sully was telling me this the other day, but when she was warming up, you know, Deese always does this thing where she doesn't throw it as hard as she can. Now, you'll see a lot of athletes, they throw javelin at the meet and they're warming up and they're ripping bombs. They're getting after it. And then all of a sudden the competition starts and they just don't throw as far. And so what I've noticed with Deese, and honestly, it's one of those things we try to do with a lot of our athletes now. She gets out there and she throws it so light, so easy. She wants to make sure she has good connection through the point, which gives a great flight. And it's so funny, Coach Sully's on the side. You know, he doesn't see her throw all the time, but he's like, oh man, she's going to have to put a little more energy to it than that. You know, it's not going super far. And I said, was it through the point? Was it a clean release? He goes, hey, it was perfect. I said, oh, we're good then. I said, when she starts, then she'll take the governor off. We try to not be warm-up warriors or anything. We don't want to win the warm-up. And I think she did an awesome job of that, of just, you know, she started off her first throw. It was a 52-something. Really happy with that. It was a good start. I think it knocked the dust off. Second throw was 54-something. That put her at that point, I think, in seventh or eighth. And we felt pretty good about, you know, after we went through two rounds of getting through that competition. By the time she hit the third round, we were very confident she was going to make the finals. And from there was just about holding on. And, you know, that last throw, I keep playing it over my head, which was her season best. And look at it, you know, from the angle I am, I'm 100 meters away behind her. I'm trying to watch it on the TV. And you sit there and you're like, oh, I think that's this distance or that distance. And so, you know, you keep playing that over and over. And I thought it was an awesome throw. And I'm just excited because I know she's going to continue to throw far. And she has a few more meets, you know, once she goes back home for Iceland. And I joked around with her. I said, oh, you know, you're going to go home and throw 58 meters. And, you know, it's typically how it works. But you know, I think she did an awesome job. And again, just no surprises there when it honestly comes down to it. When you put the work in that she does every single day and just approaches training the way she does. And again, just consistent. You're not going to get somebody different every day. You're going to get the same person. And that person is consistent and relentless when it comes to how she trains.
It's pretty remarkable because her PR, her career best, came about this time last year. End of May, she gets that high water mark to start this deep end of the season run. Did you kind of feel that momentum from the end of last year into this year that has kind of led to all that success? Understanding she had some obstacles beginning of this year she had to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you ask her, I mean, she'd be pretty honest in the fact that we definitely want a little bit more out of this season. But the good thing for her is it's not done. She still has a few more meets at home. And she's been dealing with some injuries here or there. And again, they weren't the over the top kind of acute, like, oh, this is broken or this is snapped or something. You know, it was more just we dealt with some things here or there that just kind of happened to javelin throwers, whether it's the knee, the shoulder, just like that overuse. So I asked her the last couple of weeks, it's like, hey, like, what do you want to focus on? She's like, I'm just so tired. I want to feel better. I said, okay, this is good. I think your training's all lined up where it needs to be. Let's just take some rest and recovery. And we saw the video that Abby recorded. Disa was playing around the weight room, had a big smile on her face. And yeah. How do you feel? She's like, oh, I'm tired, but if I just get some rest, I'm ready to go. I feel good. And so she did everything she was supposed to do to line up to that. And when she gets to go out there and actually have the competition, executed on the biggest stage. And again, I think so much of what Disa did last year mirrored what Amaya did this year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Disa had a big PR at the first rounds, gets the national meet. And I think just kind of what we kind of talked about, she was like, wow, that was a lot of people. That was a big meet. That was a different atmosphere. And I think that she kind of set her sights like, okay, now I know what to expect. I'm ready to go next year. Look at Amaya, has a good run up, wins conference outdoors. Then she goes to the region meet, has a PR, a big one, and then gets to the national meet. And it's just like, you know, we told her, we said, Amaya, you were in probably the deepest high jump field we've seen in a long time. I mean, there was a lot of women jumping very high. And it's like, so, you know, a little baptism by fire there. But I think she did an awesome job of just keeping the pedal to the metal there throughout this important time of the season and not letting anything get too big. But again, a learning experience. And for her, a sophomore, every single athlete we brought to the national championship, they weren't a senior. You know, we have everybody's coming back. And that's just exciting when you think about the future of what we can do, especially when you consider that we did want a lot more athletes here. And I think we're capable of it. Luckily, Sully just went to get some coffee, but he's going to kill me when I say this. But we already started talking about next season, and we had a long car ride yesterday, and I was like, hey, so, you know, this meet next year. And he rolls his eyes. He's like, we're not even home from this trip yet. Why are you worried about this? I'm like, nah, it's just, I'm a little crazy. The track coach, it's just how it is.
Hey, you always got to be going fast. That's the nature of it in whatever capacity that is. But Amaya Janiyah is exactly where I wanted to go next with you, right? And no surprise, we're continuing to talk about throwers and what Janiyah did and stringing together PR, 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 just like that. Amaya, like you mentioned, a great run. How excited are you for the future of those two as they make their Eugene debuts and acquit themselves more than well?
When we signed Amaya, she reminded us so much of a former athlete, Clarissa Cutliffe, who I think was a six-time All-American for us. Same high school, same coach, same program, same everything. And so Amaya is now starting to carve out her own story. And we love that because she's just somebody that, I mean, my gosh, look at it this way. When she's out here at Eugene, we say, Amaya, you good? She's like, yeah, I'm good. Like, all right, let us know if you need anything. And then you don't hear from her for 24 hours. It's not a bad thing. It's more so just she's very self-sufficient. She's very grounded. She's just somebody that she's just locked in on. I say that because it just reminds us of an old story of Clarissa was here. Coach Sully and I, we took her out to lunch one day. And I think we had a cheeseburger and french fries. So she has lunch. It's like day two. We're out in Eugene. So dinner hits. We say, hey, you hungry? No, I still have my cheeseburger from lunch. I just, you know, I didn't eat all of it. I'm good. Next day, we don't see her at breakfast. We hit her up for lunch. Hey, you want to go get some lunch? We're going to get lunch. Nah, I still have my cheeseburger. We're like, we're at the national championship. I'm willing to go over budget here and feed you well. And you're sustaining yourself off one cheeseburger for 24 hours. And it's so funny. Amaya is just the same way. And I think it's just more of very selfless, very locked in on what she's trying to do. and just not getting too caught up in the moment of, oh, I've done this. Like, you know, let's go crazy. It's just more of like, no, I'm going to stick to my routine. And that's who Amaya is. Like, sometimes I'm like, all right, I think we're done. And it's like, no, Amaya's just so cool, calm, confident. She's not really the big, loud, boisterous type that's going to really announce her presence. She's going to let her abilities do the talking on the track. So just all those similarities, they make you laugh. If you've been doing this for long enough, kind of see some patterns in people.
For sure. And then on the Janiyah side of it, we got to talk throwers. It's FIU track and field, so of course we do. And when she gets PR, 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 just like that, did you kind of feel that coming? Or was that, hey, she got to the brightest stage, the biggest lights, the most people, and that adrenaline saw that hammer go really, really far?
Well, I think if you really want to look at kind of what happened, you know, you go back to the beginning of the season. I mean, I think she opened up at USF. She had a really good PR. And then this just seems to happen with hammer throwers. You kind of hit that season where sometimes the rhythm just gets a little off. Sometimes you might have a little overuse injury. I mean, she had an awesome indoor season. And I think it took some time for her to kind of, you know, you finish the indoor season, monster PR at the conference meet. And then all of a sudden you start this outdoor season, you get a big PR and you're thinking, oh man, I'm riding high. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I've been doing this for 4 months now. And then that's when you start to kind of see things start to level off a little bit. And I mean, Jan and I, we have a really good relationship as far as we get a chance to really sit down and talk about what she wants to accomplish. She's so interesting and unique when it comes to kind of how she attacks practice every day. When Jan's firing on all cylinders, she's unstoppable. And for her, she's the vibe setter when it comes to, like, you know, the music at practice. You know, you can tell when Jan has the aux, you know, you might have a little System of a Down playing or something. And I love all that stuff. So, you know, we have similar tastes in music, but kind of going all back to it, it took her a little while. We had to kind of reset mid-season, probably around Georgia Tech. And we had a conversation. It's just like, look, like, I know we're kind of dealing with trying to figure out how this is moving. We got to fix a few things, but it's just like, look, I'm here. Like, we're going to do this. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Let's try to figure out kind of what we need to do to clean some things up. All of a sudden, we started getting into UNF. We started getting our hammer back to where it needed to go. And then we just had a couple practices leading up to the conference meet where we said, all right, this is the things we need to work on, which really for Jan, it was just being confident getting into her fourth turn. And if you really want to do the breakdown of the hammer, which I don't know if you'll lose some viewers here on this podcast, but Jan essentially does four turns with the hammer. She does a toe turn where she basically stays on her toes and basically doesn't cover any ground within the circle. Then after that, she does three heel turns where you cover ground. And so what makes it interesting is if you look at her throw at the beginning of the year versus the end, there's so many changes. Maybe to the common eye, it's not going to be a lot, but for us, like the nuance changes of it. I just got my coffee so I can come back to life now. Just the little nuances of the changes she had to make. A lot of them were just little connection things. And again, I'll say this and my friends, you know, hopefully my friends, I don't know if I have any, but my friends in coaching will watch the podcast and maybe they'll get mad at me. But I think Jan has the best hammer technique at the national meet. She was technically sound. She was firing on all cylinders. The only athletes that beat her were just a little bit older, a little bit more experienced, probably a little stronger. And again, that comes with experience. And Jan already told me, you know, as soon as she took her last throw, she was like, all right, when do the workouts start? And that's like, all right, we can go to the weight room right now, but I maybe should take a few weeks off, which she agreed. But yeah, so I think leading up to it, if you look at the conference meet, she PR'd in every single throw, the shot put, the discus, and the hammer. All three events, she had a PR. And Middle Tennessee is a hard place to throw. And Heath Roman, the head coach there, he knows it, but we throw uphill there. Where the circle is about 3 feet higher is where the grass is. So the marks that Jan had were, I think, awesome. Like, we knew it was coming. And she probably would have thrown a 62 or a 63 at the conference meet if we were in a little bit more of a level playing field. And I'm actually referring to the playing field.
Right.
You know, so she gets to the region meet. And so much of that meet is about either having a great day to get in if you don't have the mark leading into it, or just not messing up. And that's what's so hard is when you've had that big mark and you're just like, okay, don't screw this up. Jan went in there in flight two. Very rarely does someone make it out of flight two. And Jan went in there and made it out of flight two and beat some people. Her first throw, I mean, really when she came down to it, she put her foot down on her fourth turn. And when you could see the connection that she had with it, it was just like, oh my gosh. You did it. Like, you threw 62-33. And then the hard part about all that is we now have to sit through another 24 throwers. And all my friends, you know, the throws coaches, hey, congrats, man. She'll make it. And it's like, we have 24 people to go. Don't jinx it. I'm a track coach. I'm very superstitious. She ended up making it. And I tried to mess with Jan. I was like, hey, and I called her. I was like, because we sent her back to the hotel. Because it's like, why stress here? So I was like, hey, I got some bad news. She was like, coach. Like, she knew what I was doing. I was like, you got to go to Oregon in 2 weeks. She's like, yes, I know, I made it. And I was like, you just pretend like I got you there. It's funny, too, because you mentioned the playing field, right? I was thinking about this today, and ironically, you mentioned the coffee. Eugene is the mecca of track in a lot of ways, but it is also about the furthest you can get in the contiguous United States from the city of Miami. How does that kind of pose a challenge for the athletes? And look, they're Division I athletes, not too much knocks them off, but does it add an extra layer, understanding they have to go cross country for the biggest meet of the year?
Yeah, I mean, and again, my boss is always, they kill me with this. Because, you know, if it was up to me, we would just leave the region meet and go right there, you know, because it takes a long time to get used to it. But we try to get out here as early as we can. And our administration is very supportive of that. They understand that travel is rough. And we haven't told anybody this yet, but I think we left campus at 6 a.m. on that Sunday. I think our flight was around 8:20 we left. So we fly into ORD, you know, Chicago O'Hare, and we're supposed to have an hour and a half layover. But I noticed that there's a little delay. So I was actually able to leave the airport and have lunch with my dad because he lives up there. And what was funny is I was like, I got to rush back. The delay is ending. It was supposed to be 2:30. Then all of a sudden I get to the airport and now it was 4 o'clock. Then it was 7 o'clock. And then we didn't end up taking off until about 9 p.m. when we were supposed to take off at 12:30. So we had almost a 9-hour delay. So when we get to Portland, I always fly in and out of Portland because having implements, you can't really fly in and out of Eugene. So we fly into Portland. We get into Portland at like midnight, you know, and then we have like a 2-hour drive to Eugene. Probably just going to stay in Portland the first night moving forward. But that was, you know, we got to the hotel. We were up for 25 hours, I think, by the time we got to the hotel because we are Pacific Coast time. So pretty much that Monday when we were out there training, there was no training Monday. It was just like, all right, you know, let's just see if we can just do a warm up. I'm, you know, a 39-year-old father of two and also another 80 other kids I'm responsible for. So I don't sleep well. So, you know, of course, I'm up at like 3 a.m. and the athletes Monday are like, oh, I napped. And then I took another nap. And then I took this nap. And oh, it was just so relaxing. And it's like, I'm sitting here stressing about next season or, you know, whatever. And it's like that time change. Like, I really don't think we were like really good until Wednesday. At that point, we were just prepping. So the practice that we had Tuesday, because for us, typically, like we're at a big championship level meet like this. We're not going to do a lot of throwing the day before. We'll do it 2 days before. And then that day before, just kind of rest, relax, recover. The Wednesday before we started the throwing on Thursday, we were just kind of going around Eugene, exploring coffee shops and just looking for something good to eat. And the athletes gave me a hard time because I took them to my favorite sandwich shop and they crapped all over it. So, you know, no.
It's all in the eye of the beholder. I've done that too. I try to be the foodie on a lot of our trips. And sometimes they like it too. And you're like, oh, good. Okay. Other times they're like, eh. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah, one of them, we're eating and they go, hey, coach, where's that sandwich place that you like to go to? You said it was really good. I'm like, you're eating it. And they go, oh, okay.
Ouch.
Fun.
Guess not. I never said it was, you know, whatever. It's funny. You mentioned traveling with implements. I never even thought about that. Have you ever, you know, whether it's TSA, somebody checking in, look at like a javelin and be like, well, that's a weapon. Why is that here?
Well, believe it or not, the biggest issue we get, the only airline that takes javelins is Southwest now. And it takes pro bubble. So if we're not flying Southwest, we have to ship them Southwest freight, which is fine. They do a good job. Now, that being said, our hammers and our disc and everything, we keep them in Pelican cases.
Right.
So every single time we check in, they're like, oh, whoa, whoa, do you have a gun in there? Is that a rifle? And we're like, no, it's hammers. And they're like, open that up. Let me see. So I have to like open it up. It's hammers. And what was really odd is Jan and everybody was flying back because she had the hammers in the Pelican case. When she was flying back, she had to call a number at TSA and they're like asking questions and they're like, this is specifically for Pelican cases. So I'm looking at her. I was like, we're going to have to get a new brand of cases for the implements. Like everyone thinks we're just shuttling weapons across the country.
Yeah. As you continue to see this program build, right? You know, we were talking Nick last year, first team, now three and Eugene all having great success. I'm curious if you all as coaches have kind of taken a lesson from that. Like, okay, here's what we want to do from our standpoint, whether it be, like you said, practice schedules, managing energy levels, understanding the stakes of it as you continue to see FIU athletes get to the grandest stage in track.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very blessed that the staff has been together for so long. Sully and Felix, you know, we're all like family at this point. And obviously, you know, we've talked about in the past, our entire staff, you know, whether it's a volunteer, or a full-time coach, GA, whatever, like they come through the program. We have a very unique situation at FIU and one that we make the most of, and I think we do a pretty darn good job of, but we want people that are from inside the family that understand kind of the challenges we face on a daily basis. And I don't think that a lot of people could find a way to be successful in dealing with what our program may deal with on a given day. So I think for us, it just continues to be recruiting the right people. I'm very adamant about really trying to avoid the portal if we can. I mean, there's sometimes where it just happens and it's a perfect situation. Octavia McDougall for us, who she's been an awesome thrower. Valerie Lastra, Ali Del Rey. I mean, they're athletes that came to FIU. And it's not one of those situations where it's like, I want out of this place. These coaches don't know what they're doing, which is my favorite thing I hear in the portal. When it's like, well, that coach is in the Hall of Fame. They can't fix you. Yeah, I'm not going to fix you. So really, it's about trying to recruit student athletes that are here for 4 or 5 years, which, if you know, these new NCAA rules, you know, people keep telling me, coach, have you seen these rules? And it's like, look, I'm going to wait until Kevin Kendrick sends me the new rules in an email. Then I'll know what's real. Like at this point, I see something on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and it's like, I don't know if that's actually what's going to happen. So kind of going back to it, we're really not overly big on the portal. We don't actively engage people in the portal. Now, there are some situations with a coach, you know, I'm from that area, I had a coaching change, or you'd love to get back and I've improved a lot. Like those are the kind of situations where we'll kind of go to the portal. But most of the time, I mean, we're still, I'm not afraid to say this, I think we're one of the only programs in the state of Florida, substantial programs in the state of Florida. I believe this past weekend, we beat UCF, USF, and UM. I don't think FAU had anybody there. So the only other schools that got us was FSU and UF. I think we're in pretty darn good territory.
Pretty good.
And so for us, going back to that, I think we're one of the only schools in the state that actually still wants to develop high school athletes. Creating that relationship, we're going to work on this together. If you look at like some of the work that Coach Sully's done with Amaya or Kylie, you know, one of our freshmen, which we're still out here in Eugene because Kylie and then Tim Beauchamp, they both made it to USA under 20s. And so they're on their way out here today, you know, and so we have two freshmen at the under 20 championships. Haven't had that in a long time. Our goal is to create this environment where high school athletes can still be developed, you know, versus the transactional, very cold and superficial way that the portal kind of works. So you're going to be here for a year or two. Let's get the most out of you. And then you go on your way. No, we're still interested in building those 45-year relationships. We do a pretty good job of that, of keeping it human around here, you know, which I definitely know programs struggle with that. If we're going to be completely honest here, we wanted more than three athletes here. And we think that we had about 6 or 7 that, as the kids say, 6, 7. At about 6 or 7 that had a chance there to make it to this meet, had a darn good chance. And I think I say this every year, you're excited about what we accomplished and we're looking forward to, like, you know, oh, this was great. Like, we get to kind of enjoy this moment. But in reality, you know, we're just like, all right, how do we get 6 here next year? How do we get 20 to the region meet? And I think we've got a plan in place that's actually doing that. And again, like, we're doing the stuff that most programs don't want to do. Most programs don't want to coach pole vault. They don't want to coach high jump. They don't want to coach any of the throws. They don't want to have a bunch of multis. We're just trying to do what we call like opportunistic recruiting. And if we find opportunities where we can bring somebody in that can help us be successful, we're going to take it. And again, we're not going to shy away from development. I'm not going to say names yet just because, you know, I want to let these athletes kind of surprise everybody. But I think we've got about 10 athletes signed for next year. Of those 10, 4 or 5 of them you probably never heard of. And they're going to be regional qualifiers their first year. And it's more so just the fact that they're going to be getting into an environment that's going to really hone in on development. Let's say we get a young woman running 10.7 in the 100. My job is not to get her to run 10.6. Let's make sure she's healthy in June. And so for us, like, I love, and Coach Sally the same way, Coach Felix, we love the idea of developing student athletes and really being able to swing for the fences when it comes to the potential that a lot of these young men and women have. And you've got to hit a criteria, you know, when it comes to what we're looking for. Like, if you come from a high school that's famous for just having awesome athletes and you're not all that great, probably not going to sign you because we know the coaches, they're good. Now, if you're from a high school, it's like, who's your coach? And, you know, they hired a local dog that just shows up to the meets. It's like, oh, okay, that's a lot different. And so we have a lot of athletes like that to just come from an environment where they just haven't really had a chance to be developed yet. And I mean, you get them in here and I think our strength and conditioning program is second to none. And then when you look at, you know, what we're willing to do when it comes to development, I think it makes us really dangerous. And then obviously the city of Miami helps a lot with recruiting, but FIU being a tremendous academic institution is definitely a big help. And as a 2-time alumni and our whole staff being alumni of FIU, we take a lot of pride in that. And so, you know, we're not just going to bring anybody into the program, or as I refer to them as the mercenaries, you know, the guns for hire for a year.
As we kind of tease the next part, looking ahead into next year, you said you've thought about it already, you're already on to next year. And now you're bringing these more athletes and you're bringing the whole crew back. So you've got the foundation plus plus, right? What is your excitement, your staff's excitement, your athletes' excitement for this next campaign, indoor and outdoor, as we get closer and closer to it?
You gave me goosebumps, sir. You got me pumped.
You started it.
No, I think the biggest thing always, and this is like the hardest part for so many of our freshmen. If you look back at like athletes like Tarissa Russell was a tremendous thrower for us. She never really made it out of districts at a high school, I don't think. She was like a 10-meter shot putter, but she had the look and she had the right mentality. And she ended up being very successful for us. Never quite made it to the national championship, but was multiple-time regional qualifier, won a few conference titles for us. When you look at somebody like that, you start to think about the program as a whole, and stay with me on the rabbit hole here. When you have athletes like that, and I think we have a ton of them, that are really willing to work hard, really willing to dig in and find out what they're capable of. When you have your teammates make it to the national championship, three of them, and then you have another couple teammates make it to the USA champs and have a chance to represent Team USA, which one of our seniors, Blake Orr, had a chance to do that his freshman year. He got third place at the Pan Am Junior Games and was a medalist in Team USA gear, which he did give me a jacket I'm very grateful for. I need to lose a little weight so it'll fit, but the jacket I got 4 years ago, I still bust it out sometimes. I've got to slim up a little bit so it can stay in my wardrobe. But when you bring in the talented group of freshmen that I think we're bringing in, because you got to realize we've got some national leaders coming in. We have athletes that are national record holders back home. I mean, we got a tremendous group coming in. But what I'm even most excited about is just everybody that's coming back that was so close to making it and then just had an awesome freshman year or sophomore year. When they get to go to that first team meeting and you get to have, hey, where's our regional qualifiers? 1/5 of the team stands up. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
A lot of athletes, they start to go, oh, I can do this. This is real. And then when you have three athletes stand up that are, hey, we're all Americans. They go, oh, wow. There's this expectation that they have to follow suit. My first couple of years as the head coach, it was like, our goal is to go to nationals. Who went to regionals in here? And one person stands up. They're like, well, we're not good enough to do this. When you start to see now that you have this group around you, and again, every program faces its own set of challenges, but we embrace the fact that we can accomplish something awesome with the group that we have. And I think doing it the right way. You know, and so again, it all kind of goes back to when you have that first team meeting and everybody gets to see, hey, I can have this level of success here. And, you know, I have to have this meeting with almost every athlete on the team where there's at some point in the year where they're like, oh, coach, I'm just not that good, or I'm struggling with this. And it's like, look, I've had this conversation with every other athlete before. Those athletes ended up becoming regional qualifiers or conference champs or national qualifiers, all Americans. If we didn't think you could do it, we wouldn't have recruited you, but we did, and we believe you can do it. So just believe in yourself. And a lot of times the cool thing about track is that, and it's also the double-edged sword too, you get that instant feedback. Every single rep you take in practice either affirms or denies your feelings about yourself. And I try to really avoid it when we come to like putting a cone out. Like I never really put them out on purpose, but there's a funny thing that happened with the throws this year. One day somebody had dug a hole out there, like a big, like 10 by 10 foot hole. I think they were testing the soil or something. And they just kind of left it. And that hole was right at 50 meters. Oh, every discus thrower every day would go up there. Oh, I'm having a bad day. Oh, I'm having a bad day. And then one, oh, coach, I got it over the hole. Great day. And it's like, when you have that instant feedback, it's really hard.
Yeah.
To kind of take constructive criticism sometimes. I'm Mr. Positive Sandwich. You know, I fill myself up on positivity sandwiches. It's like, hey, I thought that was a really good throw. We can work on this, but I think you did an awesome job doing that. And then they're like, no, coach, it didn't hit the hole. And it's like, okay, well, never mind then. And you know, that's the hardest thing. And same thing with Coach Sully. Got the soft bar up or the hard bar. And he does a good job sometimes of not telling him where it is. But you know, after muscle, you know, so many reps, muscle memory tells you where it is. And then same thing with our sprinters and our distance runners and our multis. Like you got a stopwatch out there and it's telling you what you're doing. And so you've really got to have some thick skin sometimes to be able to manage what that feedback can do to your expectations of yourself. Sometimes as coaches, we have to fib a little bit where we're, you know, we'll put the cone at 60 meters and they take a throw and it doesn't quite get there. And like, oh, it's terrible. Like, no, the cone's at 65. And usually I can get away with that on a younger athlete. And then they go, oh, and they feel good about themselves. Then they throw past it and it's awesome. But sometimes the older athletes are like, coach, I put a stick out there. I know what that cone's at. And you're like, all right, I tried.
Yeah, worth a shot.
For us, just that's what makes it so difficult. It's just trying to, especially when it's August and September and we're pushing sleds and running stadiums and we're puking and all that stuff. It is very hard to kind of stay focused there. But the older I get, the shorter that time frame becomes. We're already sitting here. We might go to a track meet in December and we're like, all right, that's only about 7 months away, maybe 6.5. So,
right.
There's really, you know, it's just the never ending season, as we say. So,
yeah, absolutely. But we're excited to see the next part of the never ending season. Coach Hebb, we appreciate the time.
Of course, man. Yeah.
Always good to catch up with Coach Hebb. You heard him at the end there talk about the excitement for next year with some new athletes being brought in. That doesn't come out of nowhere. You're bragging about athletes that aren't even here yet. It comes with a high degree of expectation. This is a program that's delivered time and again. Now with some facility upgrades as well, everything is really looking up for FIU track and field and cross country. All right, that means the 25-26 season is in the books. Now we get ready to turn the page and bring ahead the 26-27 athletics calendar year, which means there's so much to talk about as we begin to wind down some of the dog days of summer.
As always, keep it locked on FIUsports.com for the most up-to-date information about Panther athletics and right here on the FIU Athletics Podcast brought to us by Baptist Health. With next season right around the corner, who knows who we'll talk to next. But for now, and as always, pause up.